debt. It keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. Find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. Stop those threatening phone calls, and without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, it turns out it was all fake. Meat shortage, that is. It was all fake. Seriously. The headline over at rawstory.com. It was a fake meat shortage. The reality is, and there's pieces today in the New York Times and the USA Today, pointing this out, that the industry, when the meat industry, first of all, you had COVID discovered in a bunch of packing plants, okay? Smithfield was at the top of that list. Smithfield is the largest pork producer in the United States. They are owned by the Chinese. Let that sink in for a minute. And during the month of April, in the United States, we shipped 129,000 tons of pork to China. So we get the infections. The Chinese company that owns Smithfield gets the profit. The profit doesn't even go to the United States. We get the infections. We get to pay for the hospitalizations. We have our people die. And China gets 129,000 tons of pork in just 1 month, just the month of April, when this was just like exploding. And so word gets out about the meatpacking plants. And I think probably, you know, credit where credit's due. Rachel Maddow really was the one who broke this story in a big way over on MSNBC. The meat processing industry immediately started issuing press releases saying there's going to be a meat shortage, which freaked people out. Wendy's was like, oh my God, you know, we know we're going to have to dial back on burgers. And some stores started rationing meat, because people were buying meat like they were buying toilet paper. There was never a meat shortage. Literally, there was never a meat shortage. And in the midst of the so-called meat shortage, we were shipping hundreds of thousands of tons of pork and beef. And, you know, the chicken producers in the United States just got permission from the Trump administration to ship, you know, slaughtered chicken to China, where they will be processed by low-wage workers, and then they will ship, you know, the breasts and thighs and legs and stuff back here to the United States for you and me to eat. Well, not for me to eat, but for those of you who eat birds to eat. And I mean, this is just mind-boggling. The Orlando Sun Sentinel has done some really good reporting on this. Michael Corkery and David Yaffe Bellani reporting, Smithfield Foods was the first company to warn in April that the coronavirus pandemic was pushing the United States. And this is a quote from Smithfield Foods, the Chinese-owned pork producer here in the United States that produces pork here in the United States for export to China. the largest pork producer in America. Smithfield Foods said, quote, the United States is perilously close to the edge in terms of our meat supply. That was back in April. That same month, just Smithfield sent 9,170 tons of pork to Americans? No, to Chinese. Now, frankly, I think the whole factory farming industry should be dismantled, and people who want to eat meat should have their own chickens and cows and dogs and whatever meat they want to eat. But, no, not dogs. Actually, in my mind, I mean, these are all sentient beings. Smithfield was bought, by the way, by the Chinese in 2013. So far, 25,523 meat packers in the United States have contracted the virus. 89 have died. You know, over 600 doctors and nurses have died in the United States. Can you imagine what the Republican Party would be saying right now if 600 doctors and nurses and 89 meat packers had died because of decisions that Barack Obama made? Can you friggin' imagine how we would respond to that? Well, it turns out that what the industry was doing during this time was a slick little sleight of hand. Not only were they saying, oh, there's a meat shortage coming, if we have to, you know, we've got to be able to cram our workers in. So, number one, they got Donald Trump to issue an executive order saying that meatpacking plants have to open back up, which is, of course, what they wanted. The owners of these factories aren't showing up. They're not working. They're not on the line. They're not going to get COVID. They're sheltering in place in their mansions or living in China. So, you know, it's just the workers. Who gives a rat's ass about the workers, right? In Trump world, in Republican world. So you've got some dead workers. They were mostly black and Hispanic anyway. Right, that was the other thing that was promoted. You know, fewer than a quarter of the people who work in meat processing plants are white. So therefore, they're disposable people. I mean, that was the entire subtext that we were hearing on Fox so-called news and right-wing hate media. And then they lobbied the Trump administration to give them an elimination of liability. Those workers, when they get sick and they get hit with bills of as much as $1 million, a guy a couple days ago is all over the news. Sorry, I don't have the story right in front of me, so I can't give you his name, but got COVID, went to the hospital, got admitted, ended up getting really sick. He was in the ICU. He was on a ventilator. He recovered. He went home. And he got a bill for $1.1 million. Other people have shown up at hospitals with sore throats and coughs, the symptoms of COVID, and feeling like crap. And they get the COVID test, and whether it's positive or negative, they get home, and there's a bill for $2,000. We're literally the only country in the world that does this. But in any case, the Trump administration was lobbied by the meat processing industry, help us force our workers to go back to work. And, you know, this was pioneered by the pork and chicken producers and beef producers across the country. And we've seen, you know, the major outbreaks in this country have been in nursing homes, which are, you know, Seema Verma is, you know, the head of the Health and Human Services, HHS, is supposed to be responsible for this. Right. Nursing homes, which are, you know, federally regulated, but not, there's no oversight, and meatpacking plants. And this is just exploding across the country. So now, they got Trump to say, okay, you must reopen. Cool, that's what we wanted. And the workers, you must go back to work, and if you don't go back to work, you can't get unemployment benefits. And now Antonin Scalia's son, Eugene Scalia, who is a lawyer who spent his whole life lobbying, working against unions, is in charge of the Department of Labor, the organization that oversees unions and labor in general. And Scalia is working with governors in red states to prevent people from getting unemployment benefits if they're afraid to go back to work because, you know, maybe they're over 40. Which means, you know, you have a much higher chance of dying or maybe they're overweight or they've got diabetes or heart condition or asthma, any of those things that might cause you to die pretty easily if you get COVID. You would think they could say, you know, I'm not going to go back to work, at least not for that pay, and risk my life. But no, Eugene Scalia and Donald Trump and the Republicans in Congress, no. Tough luck. Got a note this morning from one of the largest pharmacies in Canada that ships to the United States. They've got a lot of U.S. citizens who are customers of theirs. And I was one a number of years ago, and I'm still on their list. And it says, continued increase in the broad range of pharmaceutical products going out of stock. It's been experienced by distributors worldwide, including in the U.S. Most of the products with an out-of-stock status have no estimated restock date, which is very unusual. This is very concerning because we've never seen so many products out of stock in the history of our business. For example, the antidepressant Zoloft is now unavailable worldwide. Why? Because it comes out of China. The raw ingredients are almost exclusively made in China, and then the pills are processed in India. And China's having problems with COVID, and so it's a meltdown. Let's expand that logic to chicken, says the Trump administration. Tony Corbo is on the line with us. He is the senior government affairs representative with Food and Water Watch and Food and Water Action. Food and A&D, foodandwaterwatch.org is the website. And Food and Water Watch also is the Twitter handle. Tony, welcome to the program. Tell us what the deal is here. What's the connection between chicken being grown in the United States and China?
This has been going on for 15 years now. China has wanted to export poultry to the United States. It came about as a result of our mad cow case in 2003, where China was a big importer of U.S. beef, and then they stopped importing because of the mad cow case that was found here. And so when USDA attempted to restore our export market to China for beef, China came back and said, we want to be able to export poultry to the United States in exchange. In 2005, the George W. Bush administration proposed a rule that would allow China to export poultry to the United States, but they put in a condition that the slaughtered chicken would have to come from an approved source. And at the time, the only approved sources were the U.S. and Canada. And we would ship the raw carcass over to China, they would process it, cook it, and then send it back here. And so in 2006, even though the USDA received many comments, most of them opposed to this scheme, USDA approved granting China equivalency status for their processing inspection system. But China was not satisfied with that. They kept on pressing USDA for their ability to process and slaughter their own poultry to send to the United States. And so while we haven't received too much chicken under the provisions of the 2006 rule, there was only one shipment, and then that happened in 2017, of 110 pounds of breaded chicken nuggets and patties. China has consistently tried to get USDA to let them ship their own poultry to the United States. And sure enough, in 2019, as part of the deal that the Trump administration signed with China to lessen the tensions in the trade war that the Trump administration essentially caused, USDA finally gave the go-ahead for China to ship its own poultry to the United States. They haven't done so yet, but it sets up the system for China to export to the United States.
Now, outside of the obvious, anything made in China is taking jobs away from the United States and all that kind of thing. And I say that, you know, with some ambivalence as somebody who doesn't eat birds, you know, as a vegetarian, an occasional pescatarian, I suppose. But why should we be concerned about the fact that our chicken might start coming from China?
Well, I mean, there are a couple of things. First of all, China's food safety record is very checkered. One of the reasons that USDA would not allow China to ship its own poultry here to the United States is that China hid for the longest periods of time the extent to which their poultry flocks were infected with high pathogenic avian influenza. So that was one of the restrictions that was placed originally. What's interesting that's happened fairly recently is that China has now designated two Cargill built plants in China for poultry slaughter and poultry processing. And so now those two plants, they constitute half of the approved plants that China has designated being able to export to the United States. One of the new Cargill plants has the ability to slaughter 225 birds per minute. The current maximum here in the United States, even under a deregulated inspection system, is 175. So we're fearing what's going to happen here is that eventually U.S. companies are going to start outsourcing their chicken processing abroad, and specifically China. Now, Cargill is not the only company that has plants there. Tyson has plants in China. Keystone Foods has plants in China. OSI has plants in China. So it could be just a matter of time before China starts designating those factories to be able to export to the United States. There's been all sorts of controversy over the safety of our poultry plants, our meatpacking plants, and it's really been highlighted during this COVID crisis here in the United States. Right. So why not ship everything off to China, have them process it, because those workers don't have the same rights.
Right now we are desperately freaked out because drugs are not available in the United States because they're all made in China. Pretty soon it might be food is not available in the United States because it's made in China.
70% of our apple juice is actually imported from China right now. A lot of our seafood is imported from China. So poultry could be the very next thing that winds up shifting abroad.
And this is just so that giant companies like Cargill can kill more chickens per hour and pay their workers lower wages than they're paying the people, which are probably already fairly low wages here in the United States, to slaughter and process and raise, for that matter, these chickens. Is this going to put American farmers out of business?
It could very well put American farmers out of business if these companies, you have these unfair contracting practices here to begin with, the big poultry companies that essentially pay farmers peanuts to raise the poultry that's eventually slaughtered in these big factories here in the United States. And so it could very well shift the production abroad.
Tony Cordo with Food and Water Watch, foodandwaterwatch.org, the website. Tony, thanks for dropping by.
Thank you for having me on, Tom.
It's like Trump has given all his lip service to stopping China. It's like, hey, let's outsource chicken to China, just like we outsource toys and pharmaceuticals and electronics and fill in the blank.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Louise and I were walking down the trail the other day along the Columbia River here, and there's this long area where these bright yellow flowers, I used to know the name of them when I was a kid, but these beautiful yellow flowers. And I remember literally 30, 40, 50 years ago, more than 50 years ago when I was a kid, a pile of flowers like that, a half an acre of flowers like that would be filled with bees. And we walked about a quarter mile along these flowers that were, you know, just wildflowers that were covering this path, and didn't see one single honeybee. We saw two of the bumblebees, I believe they live in the ground kind of bees, and we saw a few flies, and that was it. Mute Schimpf is with us, the food campaigner with Friends of the Earth Europe, foeeurope.org is the website. Mute's Twitter handle is M-U-T-E-S-C-H-I-M. Mute, welcome to the program. I read this piece that was published by Andrea Germanos over on Common Dreef, saying the insects save the farmers, save ourselves. Is what I'm seeing a local phenomena, or is this worldwide? And how serious is this vanishing, and I realize it goes way beyond the bees, this vanishing insect problem?
I mean, when we started compiling information, we were already aware that the situation is not good. But we were really shocked about the data mentioned. Insects are in decline all over the world, and the main driver for the insect loss is industrial farming, and especially heavy pesticide use. This also impacts the farming sector itself, because without insects, a lot of our crops could not grow because they are dependent on the pollination. It's broccoli, it's almond, it's cherries. A lot of our food depends, actually, around 3% of our food are depending on pollination of insects. So therefore, the sharp decline of them should make us treat them very differently than we do at the moment.
So we're literally looking at a world that might be experiencing substantial losses of food as a consequence of the loss of insects. And we're not talking about eating the insects. We're talking about the insects being the pollinators that produce food.
We talk about all insects. I mean, insects can also be plant pests. They can also cause harm to crops. But one-third of the insects who are responsible for the pollination of the food groups are under threat. And in total, one third of all insects on this planet are threatened by extinction. It's important for our nature, so we definitely should change how we do agriculture.
Is this being driven exclusively by, or even largely by, the use of chemical pesticides? Or is it also, I understand the other big factor is loss of habitat. How do we rank threats to the insect population that in a secondary way threatens literally our survival as a species?
The public interest and research focusing on insects is quite limited. So in some regions, for some species, we have quite some good ideas. For others, we don't even know that some species might exist. Some regions say we only know maybe one quarter of all insects that are actually exist on this planet. One key driver is definitely industrial agriculture, because having monocultures, using fertilizers, using pesticides, having very standardized landscapes, impacts the survival, impacts the seeds for insects. Of course, also loss of ecosystems and growing cities and having no roads. So limit the ecosystem for the insects themselves, also are key drivers. But it's very clear that especially the use of pesticides are double threat because sometimes they harm the insects directly, and secondly, by killing the weeds that the insects normally would eat, they just don't have enough to survive or to exist.
It's a huge issue. Mute Shimp, thank you so much for dropping by today. It's great speaking with you. Thank you.
Thanks.
That's Friends of Earth Europe, FOEEurope.org is the website. Twitter handle, MUTESCHIM. Carol in Manassas, Pennsylvania. Hey, Carol, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. You know, I've lived in this country a long time, and I've never, ever had this feeling before that we really don't have a president in the White House. I feel like he's just somehow moved on. He has no regard for the lives lost from COVID-19, for black lives, for police violence, for any of these things. All he's interested in now is just kind of rolling back regulations. It's a terrible feeling. I mean, I really don't think we have any leadership anymore in this country.
Yeah, and he's rolling back these regulations specifically to get more campaign contributions from the billionaires and the corporations that made them billionaires that are polluting these giant corporations. In fact, his first legislative action or act when he became president was to roll back the standards that prevented coal companies from dumping poison arsenic-containing tailings, mining waste, in rivers. That would then poison the children, you know, whose downstream cities were taking this water. It's not that he hates the environment. I don't think he gives a rat's ass, frankly. It's that there are powerful interests who will give him money, which is the only thing he cares about. It's the only currency that has any meaning in his life. Give him money if he will reduce regulations that protect people from corporate misbehavior. And that's all he's doing. That and with the Federalist Society and Mitch McConnell putting judges in, and these are judges who go along with these deregulatory policies as well. So spot on, Carol. And I share your despair is not the right word, concern that America actually needs a president, particularly at this point in crisis, and we don't have one. Scott in Kingston, Washington. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind today?
All these Republican governors that are all excited about getting the Republican convention in their states, and with no regard for masks or distancing or all that stuff. And my first thought was that it was evolution in action, that all these Republicans, all these crazy deniers are going to get together, they're going to spread the virus between each other, and a lot of them are going to die. And it just seems ridiculous, but almost inevitable that evolution takes over and kills all the crazy people.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, my concern is much greater, frankly, for all the protesters.
Yeah, I was telling your screener that in my business, I have a sign on the front door that says, if you want to come in, have a mask on, and if you don't, I'll meet you outside and all that stuff. And so I'm really conscious of it. And in our area, most of the people are wearing masks when you go to a store or whatever. But you can kind of tell from the people that you see that aren't wearing masks that their attitude is kind of, I don't believe it. It just seems to me that there's a whole lot of people that are not smart on this subject. It seems crazy to me.
And they've been sold a whole bill of goods by Fox News and right-wing hate radio about how this is the patriotic position. When Louise and I were walking yesterday, there was a guy who was coming down the trail. The trail is about maybe 3 feet wide, right? It's a path along the river. He was walking right down the middle toward us. Now, we always walk off the edge of it to the right, and then people will walk off the edge of it to the left who are coming towards us. So we're about 6 feet apart, and we're both walking on the grass on either side of the trail or the rocks or whatever it may be. This guy was right down the middle, and he was a tall, beefy guy with a crew cut, and he was wearing a T-shirt with an American flag on the front, and he didn't have a mask or anything. And he was not going to move out of the way. He was not going to move out of my way. If I'd stood in the middle, he would have walked right into me. And, you know, Louise and I got way up on the grass off away from him, and he looked at us like sneering, you know, like, you pathetic people. And I'm like, isn't it so sad that we have literally a billion-dollar media machine owned by a billionaire, Rupert Murdoch and his son Lachlan, running this thing and using the instinct for patriotism, which should be a positive thing, to turn people into asses, into fools, and putting their own lives at risk and other people's lives as well. It's just crazy. Scott, thank you for the call. It's nice to hear from you. And thanks for watching us there in Kingston, Washington. On the line with us is Caroline Henderson, the senior climate campaigner with Greenpeace US, greenpeace.org/USA, and her Twitter handle is CAROHEND at Caro Hend. On June 4th of this year, just a couple of weeks ago, Donald Trump signed this executive order that specifically said that basically every federal agency could ignore environmental rules if that's what it took to restart the economy. You're pointing out that this has nothing to do with COVID-19 or the current economic crisis, that this long predates that, and that this is basically another part of his racist, pro-extractive industry and carbon industry agenda. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And thanks for having me. So as you mentioned earlier this month, on June 4th, Donald Trump took two actions to weaken environmental regulations and public health protections. And in doing so, that was really an effort to further his anti-environment racist agenda that's been ongoing since he took office. So those two actions that he took, the first of them was an executive order instructing his administration to use their, quote, emergency authorities to bypass environmental regulations and speed up fossil fuel projects like mines and pipelines. And this order basically allows the White House officials to go around bedrock environmental laws like the Endangered Species Act and the National Environmental Policy Act, and essentially undercuts public participation in decisions affecting communities near infrastructure projects. And then the second of those actions was a decision from President Trump's Environmental Protection Agency to propose a new rule that will allow the Trump administration to downplay the economic benefit of public health protections, essentially in order to write weaker rules. So what this means, we need to recognize these two decisions and Trump's broader efforts to undermine environmental protections for what they are, and that is that Trump's anti-environment agenda is a racist agenda. And we can see that everywhere from... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you to expand on that. I think a lot of people don't immediately conflate anti-environmentalism with racism or anti-environmental policies. They don't realize how heavily those policies fall on the backs of Black and brown people and Indigenous people.
We can see evidence of this in a few places. First off, looking at air pollution, let's just take, for example, Trump's decision in April of this year during a global pandemic to weaken regulations on particulate matter pollution, despite the fact that communities who are continuously exposed to this type of pollution are more likely to have fatal outcomes from COVID-19. And this decision deepens environmental racism, given the fact that people living near coal and oil power plants and thus exposed to this pollution are disproportionately Black, Indigenous, and people of color. And that is just one of more than 100 environmental rules that President Trump has attempted to weaken or repeal, and many of those will have a disproportionate impact on Black, brown, and Indigenous communities and further jeopardize public health during a pandemic. It is worth noting here that most of these efforts have been stalled by Congress or are in the courts, but they still make Trump's malicious intent quite clear. The other area to look at is Trump's attempts to expand fossil fuel infrastructure while ignoring the public health impacts, the need for community input, or respect for Indigenous sovereignty. So within days of taking office, Trump attempted to fast track the Keystone XL and Dakota Access pipelines via executive order. And this decision on June 4th, similarly, instead of protecting public health, is essentially a rollback to benefit the oil and gas industry that has for decades been wrecking our climate and treating working class communities of color as sacrifice zones.
You know, in a way, I suppose this shouldn't surprise anybody. The Republican Party since the Reagan Revolution has essentially been, up for sale to the highest bidder and among the wealthiest corporations in the world have been, you know, prior to 2000, it was tobacco and oil. Now it's oil and mining and God only knows what all. And yet, you know, it's kind of shocking that this is happening. What we're talking with Carolyn Henderson, the senior climate campaigner with Greenpeace here in the U.S., greenpeace.org/USA. Carolyn, what should we do about this? What can individual Americans do about this?
Yeah, right now, Greenpeace, among others, are urging leaders in Congress to step in and stop Donald Trump's ongoing attempts to put lives at stake so that polluters can profit. And this is really part of a broader resistance that we're mounting to Trump's ongoing racist anti-environment agenda. And that starts with calling it for what it is. So if folks want to learn more, they can go to, as you said, greenpeace.org to take action and get involved with that resistance.
Absolutely astonishing that they're able to get away with this and that there isn't a stronger pushback. Thank you so much for dropping by today.
Thank you so much for having me. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Great having you with us.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here right with you. So a couple of other things that I want to talk about, and this is, you know, another one of these grim stories. Can you imagine if one of Donald Trump's snowflakes, if just one of these white guys that feel that they have to walk around with giant guns to compensate for their own inadequacies, if even one of them was shot and killed or even badly beaten up by a Black Lives Matter protester, or even a white Black Lives protester, we would know their name. They would be, you know, it'd be like Kate Steinle, the woman who was, quote, illegal alien, an undocumented, I believe he was from Mexico, dropped a gun in San Francisco, it discharged accidentally and killed her. And she became a hero. I mean, every single day for weeks on Fox News and right-wing hate radio, oh my God, Kate Steinle, she's dead. Oh, poor Kate, here's her family, oh my God. If even one had died. And yet the absolute opposite is happening. We saw yesterday, or day before yesterday, I believe it was, June 15th, yeah, day before yesterday, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And by the way, I reported this wrong yesterday, so let me correct the record. In fact, several people have contacted me to correct the record, and thank you for that. There was this protest, and there was a right-wing militia who showed up, and of course, the Black Lives Matter protesters. And then this crazy guy, his name is Stephen Ray Baca, showed up with a gun and shot and critically wounded Scott Williams, one of the protesters in Albuquerque. Now, yesterday I reported that Baca was a member of the militia. I was wrong. He was not. In fact, one of the militia members actually helped restrain Baca. But frankly, I would suggest to you that Baca, he was a Trump supporter. He showed up at Trump rallies. There's pictures of him wearing his Make America Great hat. And he comes and he shoots somebody. I suspect that if the militia hadn't been there with their guns, he wouldn't have felt quite so safe wading into the crowd with his own gun. I mean, nobody realized what he was going to do until he started shooting. He was an alternative delegate from New Mexico to the 2016 Republican National Convention. The shooter. In September 2019, he went to the Albuquerque Trump rally wearing a MAGA hat. He wrote about it, awesome time and a great rally. I mean, this guy's a total maggot. The Albuquerque Tea Party itself put him on their board of directors and described this guy who tried to kill somebody as a hardcore conservative. Then on June 5th, the Texas man came in with a chainsaw at Black Lives Matter protesters in McAllen, Texas. Daniel Pena, he ranted in an apparent reference to George Floyd. It was an effing N-word and a bad cop. And then he assaulted the protesters, ripping signs from their hands and revving a chainsaw at them while screaming racial slurs. Trump's campaign manager, Mercedes Schlapp, amplified a tweet that praised his racist assault. Seriously, this tweet said, "I want this guy with me in a ride or die moment." Right. Bogdan Vechurko drove a tanker truck through protesters on a highway in Minneapolis on May 31st. Tried to kill people. Didn't succeed. He hit a bunch of people. Thousands of people fled in panic. This is an 18-wheeler. He is a Trump donor. He has made contributions to the Trump Make America Great Again Committee. And he's made donations to the Republican National Committee. He is one of among 19 documented vehicle attacks on protesters. 19 times. On May 30th in Omaha, bar owner Jake Gardner killed a 22-year-old African-American man, James Scurlock, during anti-racist protests in Nebraska City. Gardner, the killer, was a volunteer with the Trump campaign in 2016 and used racial slurs against Scurlock before firing his gun. The Douglas County attorney, Doug Klein, took less than 48 hours to decide that this killer was acting in self-defense and say, we're not going to press any charges. Is this our new normal? White terrorists killing protesters, killing people exercising their First Amendment right to peaceably assemble and petition their government for redress of grievance and to have free speech? Is this our new normal? Have we entered that era? Is this like the rise of the new pseudo-Confederacy? I know that there's this whole movement, you know, the whole Boogaloo Boys thing of, hey, let's have a civil war. Let's try to start a civil war. Are we here yet? Or is this going to calm down? I am not hearing Republicans go to the floor of the House or the Senate to denounce these people. And I guarantee you, if a black person had killed, you know, for a while when they thought that maybe protesters had killed those two cops in California, they were all over it. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Well, it turns out it was a right winger.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Brandon in Texas. Hey, Brandon, what's on your mind?
Seems like it's a big talking point about this officer in Minneapolis who has all these complaints against him. So, you know, it must be justified that he's a horrible person. Now, my wife is an officer. My next door neighbor is an officer. And I can assure you, and I'm sure everyone knows, there's a lot more good officers than bad. Now, what we don't hear about is what those complaints were, because anyone can call in a complaint on any officer at any given time, and that is noted in the record. Now, we don't have information on what actually was done. Now, that officer, what he did to Mr. Floyd was absolutely disgusting. I'm sorry, we do have a record of what those complaints are and what they were. Okay.
This guy has a history, not just of getting a few complaints here and there, but of, you know, essentially sadistic behavior. So, you know, your point is well taken, Brandon, and I get it. And there's a lot of good cops out there, and nobody is denying that. Fact of the matter is, this man was a stone cold killer. Jonathan in Portland, Oregon. Hey, John, what's up? Jonathan, what's up?
Hi. Hi, Tom. I'd like people to remember the number two when you're thinking of police officers, and here's why. If you want to become a police officer, whether it's in Portland or New York City, the requirements are very simple. You need to have a high school diploma or GED with a 2.0 average. 2.0 is barely a passing C. Now, to give people an understanding of what that means, there's over 1,500 colleges and universities in the United States. And if you were to apply to those colleges or universities, exactly 7 would accept you. That's bad. And yet, if a starting salary for police officer in Portland is $66,000 a year, that's more than a biological scientist would make. Now, in the United States, by the time you're 18 years old, the chances are anywhere between 16 and 27% of the U.S. population's already been arrested. That's not just black people, it's both, mostly black people. And this is why the police are so violent. And what's happening as a result of this violence to black people, and particularly to young black men, 14, 15-year-old men, being very heavily affected, they have a 3.5% less likely to graduate high school, 2.5% less likely to go to college, and 15% chance of having some type of psychological disturbance or depression. And this is what's happening to the country. It's lack of education, and it's the citizens of this country that need to demand that police all around the country be educated. Raise the standard to a college degree. If you become a Portland police officer, they give you an incentive for a college degree. You know what it is? 2%. Citizens need to value education, and this is why we're beating our heads against the wall, because we're talking to a wall. We're trying to come up with solutions. These people do not understand reason and logic. They don't understand. They are recruited specifically to be the way they are, and we are getting the exact results that we're supposed to get, and that's the reality.
Yeah, they understand the use of force. Jonathan, you know the numbers you've been tossing out, $66,000 a year is starting pay for police here in Portland. Very specific information. You sound like you're well informed on this. Have you been working on this issue, or did you just read a really good newspaper article? Or, you know, I ask because, you know, if you are involved with this, I'd like to know about organizations in Portland that are working to change our policing.
Well, first of all, I mean, I have a background as in research, but I've always been interested in education. I'm an educator. And I've always been disturbed by the fact that, you know, in a very practical way, we're not getting good value for our money. I don't think that having someone with barely a high school diploma, you should pay $66,000 a year. But, you know, you can't appeal to people. I mean, so step back from policing for a moment and just talk about education, because people have conflated education with vocational schools, right? You go to college to get a job. You don't go to college to get a job. You go to college to learn to be a human being. And what we need in the society are better human beings. That's what we really need. But yes, the best article you want to read, a recent article from some Harvard researcher. It's called Killings by American Police. It's in The Economist, that'll explain a lot of
it. I'll look it up. And Jonathan, you just did a great description of the goal of a liberal education, and so much of that has been left behind by this whole movement toward STEM education, basically. A couple of interesting things here. I just got an email from Don Jr. I've been getting these emails, as you know, since 2015, you know, when I gave $5 to the Trump campaign. I did this with a bunch of campaigns because I wanted to get on the mailing list, and I'm still on Trump's mailing list. And in fact, there's a couple of ways you can get on his mailing list without even giving him $5. And I encourage you to do it just to see the kind of stuff these guys are sending out to get a sense of what they're talking about. I got an email a couple days ago that said, I was sitting down, it was like from Brad Parscale, I think, or somebody like that in the campaign. He says, I was sitting down with President Trump and he noticed that your name is not on the list. And then I got another one, you know, maybe a week ago that said, President Trump specifically told me he would like to have dinner with you and your significant other, your spouse. Please chip in a donation to join the raffle, essentially, for these meals with Trump. By the way, Judd Legum outed some months ago the fact that nobody ever actually wins those contests. But they must really think that they're not even they must not think. I was going to say they must think that the average person who's getting these emails is really stupid. But the fact of the matter is they've been doing them like this for 3.5 years. It must be that it works. It worked. This very intimate, you know, well, President Trump noticed your name wasn't on the list this week. I get at least one a week of those kind of, you know, those kind of things. You were one of our greatest supporters, you know, Fred. And now, you know, it's absolutely bizarre and absolutely fascinating. I'm not quite sure what to make of it. But anyway, so there's a lot going on. Let's pick up some phone calls here. Ed in Mansfield, Ohio. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind today?
You know, there's four senators that have allegedly dump stock right after coronavirus meeting. However, as you said earlier, Richard Burr has been dealt with the most harsh. I'm wondering, you know, the Senate Intelligence Committee came out with a bipartisan report saying, yes, Russia did interfere in the election, and yes, they did want Trump to win. I think that's maybe why Burr has been targeted so heavily.
Oh, count on it. Count on it. That's the point that I was trying to make, Ed, is that Trump is going after Burr. He sent the FBI after Burr because Burr is now his political enemy, even though he's a Republican. And Burr is retiring, right, by the way, as well. So Trump doesn't give a rat's ass about the future of Richard Burr. So he's going after Richard Burr. But Kelly Loeffler, she's up for re-election in Georgia. She's not retiring. She may win that seat. Who knows? And her husband is the president of the New York Stock Exchange. And, you know, Trump has fantasies of someday the Trump organization going public and all this kind of stuff. So and her husband gave $1 million to a Trump super PAC. So, you know, surprise, surprise. And it may well be one of these super PACs that's paying huge salaries to Trump and his kids. Again,
right.
So go ahead, Ed.
You have Jim Imhoff, who's one of the biggest climate change deniers, who also has, you know, skated scot-free so far. So.
Yeah, and then Dianne Feinstein was the fourth one that they were accusing, but she's actually a very, very wealthy woman. Her husband, I believe, is a billionaire, or at least a multi-millionaire, and she has a professional money manager who handles all her stuff, and she doesn't interact with him. So she's been able to demonstrate that, and nobody's suggesting, to the best of my knowledge, that Dianne Feinstein, you know, was dirty in this thing. But it was just a lucky call or a good call on the part of her money manager. But that, you know, that's the lineup. And the one guy who said Trump was put into office by the Russians, even though he's a Republican, is the one guy that the FBI is knocking on his door. It stinks.
Yeah.
Ed, thanks for the call. Jim in Tower, Minnesota. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind today?
Trump's speech I heard early in the year when he was in Europe. I think he was in the Netherlands, where he said he was going to get back at Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats for impeaching him. He was going to eliminate Social Security. And
yeah,
I was
well,
before in May, and I'm kind of concerned.
Yeah, he's not going to. Every Republican president since Eisenhower has taken a run at this. The most successful was Reagan. He made Social Security benefits taxable. They didn't used to be. And he raised the Social Security retirement age from 65 to 67. And it didn't phase in until just the last couple of years. And he doubled the Social Security tax, which was arguably necessary. That was, you know, George W. Bush in 1979 campaigned, or I guess it was 78, the 78 election. He ran for Congress from Texas for the House of Representatives, the U.S. House, and he lost because his single campaign shtick was privatizing Social Security. In 2005, when he won re-election, he came right out and he said, you know, I've got political capital from winning re-election. I'm going to use it to privatize Social Security. And I believe he spoke in 24 different cities. He traveled all around the United States giving speeches about how important and how urgent it is to privatize Social Security right now, turn it all over to Jamie Dimon and the banksters. And the more often he spoke about it, the lower his favorability ratings went. So, Jim, I'm really not worried about that. There's a very easy fix for the small problems that Social Security is facing right now, and that is simply to require billionaires and millionaires and multimillionaires to pay the exact same percentage of their income into the Social Security Trust Fund as you and I do, as people who make under $130,000 a year do. It's a very simple, very straightforward.
And that's it. You know, it's called lifting the cap. But I wouldn't worry. He's not going to do it. Harry in Lompoc, California.
Cognizant disconnect. We have RT, Russian TV. We have BBC, British Broadcasting Company. Why is it that Fox seems to lead our country when it's a foreign entity? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Rupert Murdoch did acquire U.S. citizenship. I don't know if his sons have. I'm assuming that they're dual citizens. And Prince Talal al-Awid, if I'm remembering his name correctly, who used to own 7% of Fox News or of News Corp, sold that, you know, right after 9/11. So right now, as far as I know, Fox and News Corp are actually American-owned companies. What am I missing?
That's intriguing. I know that he, being Rupert Murdoch, had been seeking American citizenship for quite some time. And I had heard that he had at one time sought citizenship in China. Is that correct?
Well, he was married to a Chinese national. He was married to Wendy Deng, his wife, for some years. In fact, there was considerable concern that she was actually a spy for China.
Interesting. Well,
I don't know if he was looking for citizenship or not, but...
Right, right. It seems as though there is a broader context and it has...
Harry, you want to do a little bit of a fascinating, deeper dive on this. Pull up your favorite search engine. My favorite is DuckDuckGo.com. And plug into it Kevin Rudd, in quotes, R-U-D-D. He's a former Prime Minister of Australia. Kevin Rudd and Rupert Murdoch, in quotes, those two names. And you will get an op-ed that Kevin Rudd published last year in the Sydney Morning Herald, which is the largest newspaper in Australia and the largest paper in Sydney. And Sydney is kind of the New York City of Australia. And in that op-ed, Kevin Rudd, in fact, I think the title of it might be Rupert Murdoch is the Cancer on Australian Democracy. And he goes through how Rupert Murdoch destroyed democracy in Australia and then went to the United Kingdom and damaged democracy there. And then came to the United States, and now he's bringing that cancer to the United States. It's a fascinating article. I highly recommend it.
I really appreciate that. That's very intriguing. I would like to, you know, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I'd like to close by saying my degree studies have taken me into, because archaeology and philosophy has taken me into learning certain aspects about ancient culture, such as rune lore. I would suggest that Fox in capital letters, F-O-X, is runic symbology, not too dissimilar to what it is that Hitler, his subcultural group, was utilizing as a means of using kind of symbology as a form of subterfuge. So just a thought for you.
Any idea what those three particular letters mean in a runic context?
Yes, I know exactly what they mean.
That's the old Norse language? What?
It's Germanic, yes. So I don't know how much time we have, but fair and balanced is and its dichotomy are ingrained within an aspect of that.
Fascinating. Well, you know, tweet me any details you've got. I'd love to see them. Harry, thanks a lot for the call. Connie in Reno, Nevada.
Hey, Tom, I'm just concerned that with all the conversation about improving our police departments, that it always goes to high education, to college degrees. And to me, it just seems like what we're missing is the human aspect of it. What we need are people that have empathy, conflict resolution skills, things that are difficult to teach in a classroom. And we've never had a better education, better educated population than we have today. And yet it hasn't solved all the problems because we keep missing people. And there's a lot of people out there that would make great police officers, but maybe they have a blemish on their record from when they were young. And that seems to just, you cannot be a police officer with anything on your record. So what we're left with are people, we would end up with all college-educated people that have never been in a scuffle who don't understand that world. And it's a difficult world, and I think we're missing a really important point here. I grew up in a small town with officers who had been in trouble before they became police officers. And, you know, they just knew everybody. They knew how to treat people. And I think that's the part that we're missing in this whole thing. I don't have a college degree, and I've always been looked down on in my jobs because of it. And I often walk away scratching my head thinking how they don't seem that bright sometimes. Just going to school, you need people with that empathy and, like I say, conflict resolution ability.
Yeah.
So that's my take on it.
Yeah, there's
and a good one. It's a concept called emotional intelligence, the EQ quotient.
Yes.
It was a big fad
Absolutely.
Back in the 80s and 90s. I'm forgetting the name of the author who came up with it. But there are some people who are very, very smart. They've got very high IQs. They've got lousy emotional intelligence, low EQs. And there are people who have, you know, extraordinary emotional intelligence. They have empathy, they have understanding, they have insight, but they may not be able to do, you know, quadratic equations.
Right.
know, they may not have even the propensity, even the desire to have a college education, but they really should be in the police, you know, or in, you know, however we reinvent them. I think that's such an important point, Connie, and thank you for making it and stopping this conversation, this, you know, let's simplify all this down to we need more education, we need more money, whatever it may be. We've tried all those things, you know, I think some of the nastiest people on earth have had college educations. So Connie, well said. Brittany in Los Angeles. Hey, Brittany, what's up?
Hey, so my boyfriend had just showed me your podcast. I think it's awesome. We've been reading a book called The Economic Hitman by John Perkins, and it's disgusted me with how America has treated other countries and how the luxuries that we have on the backs of debt from other countries, and how there's migrants coming from Central America right now because of what we've been doing to their countries. So I've even thought, like, maybe I should move out of the country because the quality of life here isn't as high as what it shows on TV. But I think mm-hmm. that would be kind of running away from the problem. And I was wondering.
Well, plus, you know, nobody is going to take us, Brittany. Canada is no longer basically taking American citizens.
I know. I'm like, well, maybe Portugal or Costa Rica or just somewhere that's, you know.
Mexico just kicked a bunch of us out. You know, the rest of the world is looking at us going, oh, man, no way. And you can kind of see the evolution of this. The rest of the world first respected us, then feared us. Now they feel sorry for us.
It's disgusting. And where our government is going right now with corporatocracy, with the Glass-Steagall Act from the 90s, with economic hitmen around the world, Amazon not paying taxes, like, what is it? The only reason why I would stay here is because I would want to take action that was meaningful. Mm-hmm. You can't just write to a congressman. I kind of feel like they're all a part of it. Like, they're all being lobbied. You know, I'm wondering, just from your point of view, what is the best action that a citizen can take to change the tide? Because with so much money involved in politics, I feel very helpless, you know?
Yeah, I get absolutely where you're coming from, Brittany, and I've spoken and written extensively about this. I think the two things we need to do, first of all, let's identify where this originated. In 1976, the U.S. Supreme Court, up until from the founding of the Republic until 1976, giving money to politicians in exchange for them doing things for you was considered bribery, and it was a crime. It was a felony. And in 76, the Supreme Court ruled in a decision called Buckley versus Valeo that if a rich person owns a politician or even dozens of politicians and those politicians dance to that rich person's tune, that's no longer called bribery. That's called freedom of speech. Money is speech. So that's where that originated. And that brought us Reagan, and that brought us the Reagan Revolution. So we got to get money out of politics. There's only one party that has been working aggressively to get money out of politics, and that's been the Democratic Party. That said, there are still a lot of Democratic politicians who are taking big money and who are relatively corrupt. So the two things that we need to do, Brittany, is number one, we need to get inside the Democratic Party. Volunteer with your local in Los Angeles County, contact your county Democratic Party and say, how can I participate? How can I become a precinct committee person? How can I become an insider and help turn this party progressive and help fight money in politics, number one. And number two, look for progressive politicians who are not corporate funded. You know, people like Congressman Mark Pocan or Ro Khanna, some of the people who have come on our program, Pramila Jayapal, the Bernie Sanderses of the world, but a lot of them are much more low profile. And do everything you can to help them. And in most cases, there's a lot you can do without spending a penny. You know, you can phone bank for people. You can publicize what they're doing on social media. What we need is that political revolution. So those are the two big steps that I would say, Brittany, that we really need to be taking. Tag, you're it. Share progressive media with your friends, by the way. Please. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great afternoon.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.